Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Well, normally you have an intro to that, but it appears we're having some issues, which is apropos for the way this show is going to go. I'm your host, Jacob Westendorf. This is Pulse of the Pack on Sunday night. It is 7 o'clock, September the 16th. The Green Bay Packers and the Minnesota Vikings ended in a tie.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
And there you have it. Thank you so much, Blog Talk Radio. This is Jason Perona, Pulse of the Pack. I'm jumping in over Jacob Westendorf, who is somehow trying to maintain himself driving back from Lambeau Field, as pissed off as I think I've ever seen him after a game. This is Pulse of the Pack, getting used to the new NFL. That's the title I gave the show. Jacob, you had a different idea.
Yeah, the title of the show is Getting Used to the New NFL. My title was Expletive Horseshit. And I'll let you figure out which word I had in the front there. It was rough. It's been a weird day. I have been up since 5:30 this morning, driving to Green Bay for the game today. It's as hot of a day as I can remember. I was at the Bengals game last year, which is allegedly the hottest game in the history of Lambeau Field, and this one felt worse. I'm drenched. Well, I'm not anymore, but I was drenched in sweat. They played five full quarters, essentially. It was a weird day, and we are here to talk about it. So as I mentioned, I'm your host. Jason jumped in. He said hello as well. So let's get to it. The Packers played the Vikings in a game that was kind of labeled as like Aaron Rodgers' revenge game, because the Vikings were the team that pretty much ended his season last year. He played in one more game, obviously, after that, but essentially his season was ended on that day in Minnesota last year. And Rodgers was playing injured again, and that's where I want to start, Jason, because through the week, you've got people talking about how, well, it's week two, and do you really want to put him out there and put him at further risk? And, you know, it's kind of okay if they can play Kaiser, like, say, these next 3 weeks or whatever. And I have a very strong opinion on that mentality. First and foremost, Jason, whenever somebody's injured, everyone asks, like, how's it look or whatever. My first answer is always, I am not a doctor, and I maintain that. As much as I would like to be a doctor or even play one on TV, I am not a doctor. And other than a tight end that used to play for the Packers and wear number 80 that's not on the team anymore because he quit on them last year, Dr. McKenzie is one of the most conservative doctors in the NFL, according to everyone except for the snake that I just referenced. So if Dr. McKenzie says Rodgers can play, then it's all systems go. And I think, Jason, and I'll kick this to you eventually, but I think what has happened, this is what I call the trust the process era. And what I mean by that is that was the Philadelphia 76ers slogan, and basically what they were telling their fans, hey, we're going to really suck for the next God knows how long, but trust us, not only are we going to suck, we're going to suck intentionally, but hang with us because eventually we'll be good. And I think that we've become, it used to be winning was the only, you know, winning is the only thing. Vince Lombardi said that. You know, well, I didn't say that exactly, but you get what I mean. Vince Lombardi's mentality, winning's the only thing. Now it's almost like we're picking and choosing which games are okay to lose. And then like, that's okay. And I think it's asinine that there were fans this week that were willing to punt on a game against the Vikings in which Aaron Rodgers realistically could have played. Because let's be honest, I like DeShone Kizer. I think he's physically talented. They're not winning if he's playing. This game is like 31-7 if DeShone Kizer's playing. Washington and Buffalo, maybe, but I'm not okay with punting on a game. And I think we've gotten to the point where there's so many people that would just rather have you know, in baseball, the best farm system. There are teams that would almost rather have that than the best major league team. There are teams that would rather have the best draft capital and the best draft position than playing to win. If the Packers had won this game today, they would have started the season 2-0, beating two divisional opponents and setting themselves up really nicely in what is, guys, look up and down the conference. It's a loaded NFC, absolutely loaded. I don't like that mentality at all. Jason, we talked about it, so I know how you feel, but tell the people they're ridiculous.
I am an Arizona State Sun Devils fan, and I watched them lose a bad game to San Diego State last night. But beside the point, Herm Edwards is now their head coach. The same Herm Edwards who said many years ago when he was the head coach of the New York Jets, you play to win the game. Hello. And that is all that needs to be said when you're talking about whether or not you start Aaron Rodgers in any game that counts. That includes the game upcoming when the Buffalo Bills visit Lambeau Field with the vaunted Nathan Peterman at quarterback. And that includes this game today when the Minnesota Vikings and their very physical, tough defense come into town. You always play your best player. If he came back in last week, to your point, Jacob, Dr. McKenzie, conservative, if Aaron Rodgers came in and finished last week's game, it is going to take a new injury to knock him out of a future game. That's just how it goes. It's very simple. And I give Mike McCarthy a hard time when he does press conferences for his attitude and his boring by design and getting snarky with reporters. But I think McCarthy would have done the exact same thing if somebody asked that question. I think he would have booted them out of the room and said, never again, be gone. Terrible, terrible take. So Rodgers does start this game, and he does play in this game. And I think we can all be very glad that he did, because despite not being mobile or as quick, without Aaron Rodgers, again, this Packers team is not in this ballgame. And he made several throws that were very Rodgers-esque, even though he doesn't have the same ability to drive and throw yet off of that foot. I still think he's trying to figure out how to play through this injury. And we'll get to this much later, I'm sure, at some point as we're breaking this one down. I think we're going to spend the majority of this show talking about the Vikings game today, Sunday, that we're doing the show. Then we're going to spend on Washington next week. And for very good reason. This was a crazy game. And Aaron Rodgers, you know, it's very unfortunate because some of the throws that Rodgers made that we should be talking about right now, and we should be talking about a victory, don't even count or end up as incompletions in the stat sheet and on the box score because of the way that they were officiating. I'm not blaming the ref guy either. Never let the ref. This game is exactly the point that I try to make. If someone's like, well, you're blaming the ref. No, actually what I'm doing is I'm illustrating the reason why I don't like to blame the ref. And I say, do yourself a favor and don't let the game come down to a critical call. Now, the critical call that I think made the most difference in this game was really, really bad. And it was really, really bad because of the explanation that was given as to why the call was made. We will get to that because I know that we have a bunch of fans that want to hear our take on the officiating. There's so much to get to here, but you play Aaron Rodgers if he's healthy. That's very, very straightforward, very, very simple.
Right, healthy or good enough in this case, which is what he was today, good enough to play. I mean, it was very clear that he was limited to some degree. He wasn't himself. He wasn't able to escape the pocket, all that sort of stuff. The game began, and the Packers actually made a splash play. Their first splash play of the game came on special teams. Geronimo Allison blocked a punt, and it came right into Josh Jackson's hands, and it's 7-0 right off the jump. And then from there, the game progressed in a way that favored Green Bay. I thought that they were really poised to take control of that game. They score a touchdown after the Vikings go down the field. They score a touchdown to Laquon Treadwell, which is incredible to me that it worked out that way. But the Packers go down and they score a touchdown to Devontae Adams. They get a field goal before halftime. It's 17-7. And then they have the ball in the red zone in the middle of the third quarter. And here's point number one here. Rodgers throws a back shoulder pass to Jimmy Graham. Graham makes the catch. It looks like his first Lambeau leap in a Packers uniform. and it's negated by a holding penalty. And now I'm in the stadium, obviously. They did not show a replay, and when they do show a replay, they follow the ball, naturally. So I couldn't see. The penalty was called on Lane Taylor. I've since seen the play. Kicking someone's ass is not holding. And that's what Lane Taylor did. He drove a dude into the ground that was falling over. That should not have been called holding. But what it did was it took 4 points off the board. The Packers were unable to convert from there. That was a third down play to Jimmy Graham. And it made the Packers situation harder on third down. They couldn't convert a third and long against that Vikings defense. So they end up kicking a field goal. It's 20-7. Still, two possession lead. They're in pretty good shape. But 4 points taken off the board in against a offense that, quite frankly, until one big play later on, was very dink and dunk. Kirk Cousins was very dink and dunk throughout most of the day. That's not surprising. That's kind of who he is. But that's what happened. So the first play was the holding penalty on Lane Taylor. It took 4 points off the board. And then the Vikings go down and they end up scoring a touchdown at one point to make it 20-14. And you just kind of get that feeling that this is a game that's going to go right down to the wire. Now, I really didn't expect it to go like this, but that's what happened. So, Jason, you saw the play on the broadcast. What was your reaction to the holding call?
So, as I've said a couple times, I do a local pregame show and during game show at one of the local Packers bars here in town. So sometimes there's a lot going on, and I don't catch every single play except for a replay. So holding in the NFL has become one of the more it's either very obvious or it's very arbitrary. And I just don't understand sometimes how these calls get made, because guys, you can look at the exact same player in the same game, do the same thing twice, get called for it once, and not get called for it the other time. The other thing is, when's the timing of that call? Because if you're going to get called for it, I would rather get called for it early in the game when I have a chance to make up for it, not in the last 30 seconds of it when the referees can steal the headline from the players who have busted their asses for 60 minutes at least to try to make the difference in this game and be the headlines. So it's unfortunate when they're not consistent and they call these things. I guess this is why I said getting used to the new NFL rules. It's not necessarily the actual rules. But apparently, I mean, every year we go through this, Jacob. There's the first couple of games, the NFL officials establish patterns and tendencies with how they're going to call things. And I'm starting to see what the NFL is going to be up against this year with some of the calls that were made today. Some of them were bad rules. Yes, they're bad rules, but they were actually applied correctly. And some of them were just really bad. And so here you have another case of, is this how it's going to be this year? So, you know, you're in a physical game. It's a football game. You're wearing padding. You're wearing a helmet. It's meant to be violent. It's meant to be rough. It's meant to be played in full. You got to let up and make sure that guys don't get hurt. Well, I'll tell you what, that was the reason why Mike Daniels didn't get what I think would have been a sack on Kirk Cousins, because he got a hand on Cousins. He thought Cousins got rid of the ball. As Cousins pump faked, Daniels takes his hand off and gives up on the play and stops thinking, okay, I don't want to get called for roughing the passer or some ridiculous call here. Cousins pump fakes, pulls the ball down, and takes off and picks up some additional yardage. Those are the kind of things that are the fallout when the rules are what they are and when they're called the way they're called.
Agreed. And, I mean, I understand it to a point here, because the officials have an impossible job. I think the NFL rule book is ridiculous. I think that they make rules that are completely overreactive to what happens in the previous year to try and prevent things from happening. And the reality is you can't dictate the outcome of a game, the outcome of a play, no matter how much you want to. I mean, I've always thought the whole just give quarterbacks flags guy was a little ridiculous. But at the same time, I'm almost to that point now, because, like, I mean, it wasn't just the Packers that got hosed on a call like that. I mean, Eric Kendricks was called for roughing the passer, and I don't know what else he's supposed to do. And I feel that way about Clay Matthews' hit later in the game as well. We'll obviously get to that. It's an impossible job, and I don't think the NFL helps themselves. But it's really hard to say because you can't just put in, like, apply common sense in the rule book, because your version of common sense and my version of common sense are going to be two different things. So that makes it difficult. It puts them in a bad position. But you're right. I mean, I remember when they first put in some of the roughing the passer rules, there was a Mathias Kiwanuka. There's a name drop for you. He played for the Giants, and he had Vince Young wrapped up. That's how long ago this was. Vince Young was a starting quarterback for the Tennessee Titans at the time. He had him wrapped up, and he let him go because he didn't want to get flagged for roughing the passer, and it would have essentially won the game for the Giants. And Vince Young, after he was let go, took off and ran for a first down. That was – and the Giants ended up losing that game that day. That whole thing you're talking about, Jason, with fallout, I absolutely buy that. There are just things that go through players' heads, and you're asking guys to change the way they do things at full speed. Ultimately, at the end of the day, if you're going to put so many rules of protection on the quarterbacks, and that includes Aaron Rodgers, obviously, you might as well just either allow them to throw the ball in the dirt, get rid of the intentional grounding rule, or, yeah, give them a red jersey and let's play two-hand touch with the quarterback. I mean, it's getting to a point where you just don't know what can a defender do. Is he supposed to pick them? Like, according to Corentin, the official of today's game, you can't pick up the quarterback and drive him into the ground. Okay. So do you pick him up and place him on a field of pillows? Like, I don't know what they wanted him to do. But we'll get more to that here in a little bit. The Packers end up going from there. It's 20-14 at one point. It's kind of back and forth a little bit from there. The Vikings score to make it 26-21. Or 23-21, excuse me. The Packers go down the field. They stall out and they kick a field goal. Mason Crosby makes another field goal. It's 26-21. And the very next play from scrimmage goes off Laquon Treadwell's hands and into the hands of Clinton Dix. Clinton Dix has an interception. He returns it to the Vikings' 12-yard line. The Packers are 12 yards away with just over 2 minutes to play from putting the game on ice. And this is where we get to point number two for me today. And that is he ran the ball on first down and got the clock to the two-minute warning. On second down, they ran a play-action pass that was in Devontae Adams' hands in the end zone, and it was eventually ripped out by Eric Kendricks. I thought the defender made a good play. Adams probably could have held on to it, but it was a good defensive play. And then he threw it on third down. They tried to throw a back-shoulder pass to Devontae Adams, and a touchdown there seals the game. I am okay with the play selection there. The Vikings did not end up using one of their two timeouts on that series, which left them timeouts and a little under 2 minutes to play because of the passes that were thrown. Realistically, if the Packers had run the ball twice and made the Vikings use their timeouts, the clock wouldn't have been any different than what it was when they got the ball back. They just wouldn't have had any timeouts. I'm okay with what McCarthy did because the same people that are complaining about McCarthy managing the clock poorly there and being too aggressive are the same ones that were bitching 3-4 years ago in Seattle that he let his foot off the gas. The Packers put the ball in the hands of their best player and said, go win the game. They didn't play not to lose. They played to win. I think that's a positive development in Mike McCarthy as a head coach. I think McCarthy is a very good head coach. I think that he gets a lot of undeserved flack, but he has weaknesses, just like any other coach does. Bill Belichick has weaknesses, and he might be the greatest coach in the history of the modern era. Jason, like I said, I'm okay with them throwing the ball there. The clock doesn't make that much of a difference. Even with the way the clock was, even if the Vikings don't have their two timeouts, they still have plenty of time to go down the field and get the ball into the end zone, and they need a two-point conversion eventually if Crosby makes the field goal, which he did. Are you okay with them throwing the ball in that situation, basically saying, I don't care about the Vikings having timeouts in their back pocket. I want to win the game, and I want to win it right now.
Yeah, because I'll kick it back to you because I know what your answer is going to be. What is Green Bay's best chance to win?
Aaron Charles Rodgers.
So you put the ball in your best player's hands. Everybody wants to be a clock management expert. Everybody wants to be an armchair GM and or a head coach. And yes, okay, I get it. Conventional wisdom says, listen, cut your risk, run the ball a few times, you know, take some more time off the clock, and then, you know, kick if you have to. Well, your best chance to do anything in this football game is going to start and end with the ball in Aaron Rodgers' hands while you're on offense. So whether he's running it on one leg or two legs or throwing it, I trust Aaron Rodgers to make a good throw. He made several good throws today. I've told you, I said before at the beginning of the show, he made throws in this game that didn't even count. He's not getting anywhere near the credit for what he should be getting credit for. Didn't count today. I'd love to see Pro Football Focus make up for some of their previous scoring gaffes and grading gaffes and give Rodgers some credit for some of the throws that were taken away from him because of reasons I still can't comprehend. You put the ball in your best player's hand when you're that close to the goal line, you don't assume that there's going to be a holding call. You don't assume that the offensive line is going to not pick up a blitz. You don't assume that Aaron Rodgers isn't going to be able to beat a blitz or avoid it. You know, give credit for the Vikings for making a decent call and for knowing who's at quarterback and doing what they needed to do to keep the Packers out of the end zone. But you're not going to win any argument with me, because I'm just going to walk away from it, about clock management and run the ball when Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback. This isn't Deshaun Kizer. Obviously, if Kizer's back there, then they should run the ball 5 out of 4 times in that situation. But this is Aaron Rodgers. You put the ball in his hands. It's a very simple concept that I've accepted the fact that there's a faction of Packers fans that are on one side that want to manage the clock and they want this brilliant coaching job every week, Bill Belichick style, which, by the way, they lost to the Jaguars today, did the Patriots. And the other side of the coin that says you always put the ball in Rodgers' hands, he's your best player. I know that this is not the NBA, and the NBA is a very different story, but yeah, that's essentially saying you need to drain the clock, when Cleveland is up by a point, you need to drain the clock and you need to kick it out to J.R. Smith and just see what he can do with it, instead of putting the ball in LeBron James' hands and just everybody getting the F out of the way. Is maybe a bad analogy, but that's the one that I'm going with. You can't possibly convince me that the ball shouldn't be in Aaron Rodgers' hands.
There's a reason that the majority, a vast majority of the Chicago Bulls' game-winning shots in the 1990s were drawn up for Michael Jordan. He's their best player. It makes perfect sense. The Packers here, they have the only counter-argument I would have accepted is if the Packers were having sometimes I would say coaches outsmart themselves all the time. Khalil Mack dropping into coverage last week on the Cobb touchdown is an example. Khalil Mack is a pass rusher. The only counter-argument I would – if the Packers were being successful, like rapidly successful, so let's say Jamal Williams is over 100 yards, then, yeah, you can trust to give it to him 3 times and say, hey, maybe we pick up the first down here. And if they pick up the first down, they can kneel out the clock, obviously. But they weren't. The Vikings have a very good – like as much praise as their defense as a whole gets, and it's certainly deserved – their run defense is very stout. The Packers had a little bit of success running the ball, but it wasn't like, Adrian Peterson in his prime against the worst run defense in the league was back there. So I'm all for it. Play to win. Don't play not to lose. I've said that enough times, more times than I care to remember. But if you're playing, you're playing against the scoreboard, you're not playing against the clock, so to speak. And, Jason, to your point about this faction of Packers fans that want to manage the clock, they want to be the armchair head coach, armchair. I come to the same. There are some Packers fans that are just – and it's not just Packers fans. It's every team. But this is a show about the Packers, so I'm going to explain it about the Packers. there are some Packers fans that simply are not happy. They have something to bitch about. So they found a reason to complain, in my opinion, in this case. And the Packers played to win. It didn't work out because then the next play, the next series happened. And on the first play from scrimmage, Kirk Cousins throws up a freaking arm punt. It looked like Brett Favre in the playoffs at Philadelphia 15 years ago when he threw a ball right into the waiting arms of Brian Dawkins. Jaire Alexander essentially fields a punt with an interception, and the game is over, right? Except it's not, because Clay Matthews is called for roughing the passer. Now, Jason, we talked about his penalty last week and how it was inexcusable. It was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen a veteran of his caliber do. This was different. It was the ball, I think, was just being released as Matthews hit him. Without looking at the replay again directly, I can't say. But the flag was on the ground, and I was right. I was probably parallel with it, with the play from the quarterback. So Matthews was immediately irate, and I could hear him ask, like, what do you want me to do? And Corrente, at the end of the day, this was not, because I saw some Vikings fans tweeting, texting, whatever, about how, oh, that's karma, you know. The Aaron Rodgers rule, the Anthony Barr rule, comes back and bites the Packers in the ass. That's not what happened. Tony Corrente explained after the game was over that he said that Clay Matthews picked him up and drove Kirk Cousins into the ground, which that is one of the worst explanations I've ever seen. There is no argument based on what happened on the video that that call was correctly enforced. It was asinine in every single aspect of that word. Clay Matthews got a lot of criticism last week, and he deserved it. He does not deserve the criticism this week. He did the exact right thing. Jaire Alexander should be credited with an interception to ice a game that should have been over a long-ass time ago, but it wasn't because they called the penalty, and it was ridiculous. It was a absolute... Can you guys tell how hard I'm trying not to, like, say the really bad words on this show? But it was horrible. There's no other word for it that comes to mind for it. It was horrible. And, you know, it's how the refs, Jason, you mentioned, they made themselves a story. I'm not saying they did that intentionally or anything stupid like that, but it was awful. What are your thoughts on the play, Jason? I mean, obviously, I know you don't think that Matthews roughed the passer. But what are some of your thoughts on the play?
So in an effort to maintain my not going to blame the refs mantra, I'll start with the side of it that says that Clay Matthews has played a certain style of football his entire career. And the rules have dramatically changed over the last couple, and he's developed a lifelong habit of playing a certain way, and I'm not saying that's the bad way. It's just the way he plays. He's an outside linebacker. He's paid to rush the quarterback. He's paid to put the quarterback on the ground. He has made some very violent plays in the past that stood because the rules allowed it. Now, there's a lot to think about if you're a pass rusher, if you're a defender, and you have a chance to tackle a quarterback. It's just not possible. I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to Clay Matthews and say that this particular play, I don't think it was very possible for him to hold up and do everything that the NFL apparently expects him to do. But after last week and knowing that there's a short leash on defensive players when it comes to quarterbacks, I think Clay Matthews just, he's got to try, I don't know, to defy physics. He's got to try to do something to at least make it look like he's not driving a player into the turf and picking them up. He didn't pick up Kirk Cousins. He comes through. He's got his head up. He makes a form tackle. Cousins, both feet leave the ground very briefly. His one foot returns to the ground, and he's taken down, and Clay Matthews comes down on top of him because that's just the way that physics goes. That's just the way that life goes. And, in fact, when Matthews hits the ground, seeing his own fall with his other hand, which means his other hand is not on Kirk Cousins, which means he's not trying to come down bearing any extra weight onto the quarterback, which means he can't possibly – you think that Clay Matthews can lift up Kirk Cousins with one arm and slam him to the turf? Listen, maybe he can. Maybe I don't understand the strength and size that Matthews has, but you're making a call here and you're saying that something happened when the visual evidence is very obvious that that's not the case. And the physical evidence, the physics of it all don't match either, and that's math. I mean, that's like you can prove that in a classroom. So I'm really worried, again, the motivation for the title of this show, I'm really worried that this isn't the first game that we're going to see impacted, the result impacted by the referees. And we're hoping to grab another one or two while we've got a really good chance and a great quarterback under center. I just don't know if the rule book is going to work with us here. And I sound like a hypocrite because I said I wasn't going to blame the refs. And I'm sitting here complaining about it, but I will say this. I complain about this individual call, but I don't blame the referees for the result in this game. Like I've said 1,000 times before, don't put yourself in a position to have to let the refs make a call or let a call be the difference in the outcome. But this was just tough. Last week I was pretty upset with Matthews. I was disappointed in a veteran and a former Pro Bowler who should know better. This week I really feel for him because he's turning into a goat with some in Packers Nation, and in this particular game, I don't think that was fair. I don't think he's getting a fair shake at all.
Absolutely not. So there's the angry, we're blaming the officials, even though we're not really blaming the officials portion of the show. Here's the reality, because we all watched overtime. We know what happened. The Packers had the ball on like the 35-yard line on a second and like four. Rodgers fumbled on a read option, or at least that's what it looked like to me, a zone read where he was going to try and run for a first down and get them into shorter field goal range. So he fumbles and then gets sacked. That's the only possession the Packers have in overtime. The Vikings missed two field goals in overtime, one of which was a 35-yard chip shot, and that was kind of funny for a lot of, because it was just ridiculous that way. The Vikings had several different chances to win that game. So did the Packers. The Vikings had two chances in overtime to win that game, and they didn't. Here's the reality also that comes with, did the Packers have some shady officiating or some bad officiating against them today? Yes. However, execution also matters a lot. So I mentioned, you know, Rodgers throws on second and third down in the red zone after the ha-ha Clinton Dix interception. Devontae Adams has the ball in his hands. Now, like I mentioned, the Vikings made, I thought, a good defensive play on the play, but, you know, Adams could have held on to the ball. If he holds on to the ball, the game's over. It's not, you know, we're not even talking about this. In overtime, I mentioned the Rodgers fumble. It was second and one. If they get a first down there, they're at least moving better into better field goal range for Mason Crosby. Mason Crosby missed a field goal at the buzzer. Mason Crosby almost never misses field goals at the buzzer. At least it feels like he doesn't. And he missed it wide left. It wasn't even close. There's a lot of things that the Packers didn't do from an execution standpoint as well. And one of the biggest things I always, it's like I hate it, but I admire it so much about the New England Patriots is they almost always execute. You know, situational football, they do it better than anybody. If they need 4 yards, they're sure that they get those. Just simple stuff. They don't fumble snaps. They don't drop passes. They just don't. You know, they haven't, I should say. And the Packers didn't execute down the stretch, too. That's the other reality of this situation that happened. And I think the part that hurts the most about it is it was better. It wasn't like Jair Alexander or Josh Jackson were out of position and got beat. Devon House got roasted for a long touchdown. Now, I blame that on Mike Patton or whoever it is that's making that call, because Devon House should never be on the field against Stephon Diggs when you have Josh Jackson on the bench. That I'm sorry, that should never happen. you've got Aaron Rodgers fumbling a quarterback keeper that would have been a, it would have been an easy first down. I was watching like the play, that play also happened right in front of me. Just so happened that it worked that way. It would have been an easy first down at minimum. Now with Rodgers' knees, probably not scoring or anything crazy like that, obviously. And then the throwing play, that's Devontae Adams. That's your best receiver. We're not talking about Geronimo Allison or Marquez Valdez-Scantling dropping passes here. They didn't execute. Ultimately, yes, were there some plays that didn't go in the Packers' favor? Absolutely. There's no question about that. Would that have changed the way the game went? Yes, absolutely. But plays like that happen in every game. It's not like Tony Corrente went into that game and was trying to think, okay, how do I screw the Packers today and make sure the Vikings win? Green Bay had their chances, Jason. That's kind of like what you say. I always say it's similar to what you have to say. Control what you can, and the officials won't matter. If Mason Crosby makes a field goal, we're not talking about this. If Aaron Rodgers doesn't fumble, we're not talking about this. We're talking about a huge win for the Packers at home in the division against a team everyone seems to think is one of the teams on the short list for Super Bowl favorites. But it wasn't. And that's why we're sitting and talking about this now. So, Jason, what are your thoughts on the overall lack of execution, especially late in the game?
Well, it's obviously very, very frustrating. Very frustrating because Packers had several opportunities to ice this game. And players make plays, and you've got to step up in big situations and learn how to win. And some of these young players are getting a really good education into what life in the NFL is like and how the margin is between winning and losing. I trust the defense. I still like Pettin as a coordinator. You've got Kevin King who's hurt. So Devon House is out there. I also wondered why Jackson wasn't out there. I was concerned that maybe he was hurt. And I just, we saw enough from Jackson in the preseason that I get that it's a big game and I get that you don't want him to make a rookie mistake and get burned, but instead you put the slow veteran out there who's at the bottom of your cornerback depth chart in Devon House and he gets burned anyway. So now we feel twice as bad because the guy who was supposed to be the security blanket and avoid what just happened, let it happen. He's just not good anymore. Devon House is not a good corner anymore. He's an okay corner. They're not the same thing. So that part was frustrating for me. The touchdown to Adam Thielen. I don't have words to describe how two Packers defenders can be there and the ball fits through. That wasn't even a turkey hole. That was like a turkey Cheerio. I mean, that ball could only have gone in one place to be a touchdown. And that's where it was. Kentrell Bright, man, it looks great. You're diving all over the place and you're diving across the field. Knock the ball down. Pick the damn thing off. Like that touchdown was absolutely disgusting. There's just, it's a lot of thinking back what ifs, and there's a lot of plays that make a difference in a game, but there was a major lack of execution on the Packers side of the ball. We talk about the gap between the Packers defense and the Vikings defense. Minnesota struggled today based on, you know, I'm using the word struggled based on what they've done the last year and a half, especially last year when they went to the NFC Championship game and they steamrolled through the league, mostly because Aaron Rodgers was hurt and the Packers weren't a factor. But they struggled today and Aaron Rodgers moved the ball on them, but he's Aaron Rodgers. And it's Devontae Adams and Jimmy Graham. So, but, you know, their defense made the plays. They didn't completely lose themselves. I mean, Devontae Adams could have caught a game-winning touchdown, and there's Harrison Smith making a play. He's in the way. He's there. Adams doesn't catch the ball. There's a throw into the end zone. Xavier Rhodes gets there, knocks the ball away. They're not afraid of the moment. I'm not saying the Packers are, but they didn't do what they needed to do to close it out. The defense is going to be asked to close out more games this season. It's simply going to happen. We're not going to outscore everybody. It's not going to go down that way. So if you want to make a statement and you want to take a step forward and be amongst the top defenses in the league, if you want your respect and you want to be talked about in the same breath as some of those other units out there, those other teams, you've got to do what you didn't do today. That's the only way that I can say it, because the Packers, the Vikings lost. The Packers didn't win. The Packers should have won, but the Vikings then should have won, and the Vikings lost because they have a kicker problem again. We should be talking about a loss right now. We're talking about a tie. So, okay, great. You know, whatever spirit or spiritual force out there is responsible for helping the Packers salvage what could have been a horrible loss at home to the Vikings, with the only other game between these two teams in Minnesota where they have not won a game in that building yet, somehow the Packers come out of it a little bit more okay than they should have been. But the defensive execution's got to be there. And I'm wondering if – I'm really curious to see now, and especially next week against a more inferior opponent in the Washington football team, if Josh Jackson doesn't get more of a look, because maybe they realize what Devon House is and, more importantly, what he isn't.
Most specifically, what he isn't. To be fair to the defense, here I am reverting back. They did – close out the game, but yeah, I get what you're saying. Injury wise today, the only thing that really came out that was concerning, the reason Devon House was in the game is because Kevin King left with a groin injury. Now, Kevin King he was beaten for a touchdown by Laquon Treadwell. That did happen, but he's definitely shown the traits in these first 2 weeks of why the Packers drafted him in the second round. The hard part with him is he hasn't stayed healthy. I heard a shoulder last year that pretty much ruined his entire season. And then halfway through his second game of his second season, he hurt his groin. So we'll see how serious that is. Jason, my hope is if King can't go, then Josh Jackson needs to be starting on the perimeter with Jaire Alexander in the slot and Tremont Williams manning the other side of the field. But they didn't do that today, and it definitely bit them at the worst possible time. And not even if Devon House is in the game. Are there positions you can put him in to succeed? Yes. I'm not 100% sure what those positions are. That's why I'm standing here talking instead of coaching a defense. But there are things that he can be effective with. Covering Stephon Diggs is not one of them. That should have been one where Devon House was shadowing Laquon Treadwell or Kyle Rudolph, but he never, never should have been on Stephon Diggs, ever. And that was one of the biggest plays of the game. That we didn't even really talk about it because we didn't get through it. But, yeah, the Packers are winning 23-14 and trying to kind of grind out the clock, and Kirk Cousins throws a 75-yard touchdown pass to Stephon Diggs because Kentrell Bryce wasn't there. He helped the wrong side. House got beat, and he scored a touchdown. And that was one of the turning points in the game, of which there were several. Ultimately, it ends 29-29. And I said after the game, like, I don't have a sister, but if I did, I imagine this feeling is what kissing her would feel like. That's like that old adage of, like, a tie is like kissing your sister, obviously. It didn't go the way that you wanted, but ultimately Packers have come out of these first two games. They are 1-0-1, which is going to be weird to say the rest of the year, but that's where we're at. And they have two very winnable games on their schedule throughout the rest of the month of September. They play Washington on the road next week. Washington laid an egg today against the Indianapolis Colts at home. They scored 9 points. They were abysmal. And then they play Buffalo at home, and Buffalo is the worst team in football. They had a cornerback literally quit and retire at halftime today. And I'm not joking. Vontae Davis said at halftime he put on his street clothes and he wasn't coming back out for the second half. So that's where we're at for the rest of September. Then before the bye, they will play Detroit in Detroit. And then a Monday night game at home against the San Francisco 49ers, who are 1-1. They lost to the Vikings last week. They beat the Detroit Lions today. The Packers are in pretty good shape here. I would be disappointed if they don't come out of September 3-0-1. I think they should beat Washington next week. Obviously, this is all if Aaron Rodgers is still playing. And they should smash Buffalo at home. That should be a smoke show. So that's where I'm at for these next couple games. Jason, we're through two games. Through those two games, what is the most encouraging portion of the team, and what is the portion of the team that has been a problem? And for me, the answer is the young corners, Jaire Alexander and Josh Jackson. Both of them have looked the part. Both of them have made plays. Jaire Alexander should have game-winning plays each of the last 2 weeks, but roughing the passer penalties on Clay Matthews has ruined them, one of which was legitimate, one of which was not. And Josh Jackson has looked the part as well. He scored a touchdown today on special teams. Granted, that was more right place at the right time, but he's looked good when he was playing cornerback as well. The issue that I'm having is the pass rush is abysmal. They can't do anything if they don't blitz. Kenny Clark had a sack today, and they had Jaire Alexander and Josh Jackson, I believe, split one. But they can't get any pressure if they don't blitz. And, I mean, there's guys on there that are – they should have at least an average pass rushing. Clay Matthews isn't the guy he used to be. He can still do a little bit. Nick Perry's getting paid a lot of money. I'm not 100% sure what for after the way he's played. I know he had the game-winning sack last week, but he didn't play very well before that. And he didn't do anything of note today. Mo Wilkerson, Mike Daniels, I mean, the pressure just isn't there. And that's something that if the Packers want to get to where they want to go, yes, having a secondary that looks to be relatively shored up with the two rooks and Kevin King and Tremont Williams, the Wiley vet, that's going to be important. But, you even saw it today. Kirk Cousins had a long time to throw the ball. And I'm not even saying you got to sack him every play, but at least make him feel like he can't have a cup of coffee and a peanut butter sandwich in the pocket. So, and I feel like I've talked about the edge rushing unit, Jason, on this show in the offseason for probably 3 years. I've often said, I feel like that's one of the weakest positions on the team. They haven't invested in the position. The last high round pick that they made for a pass rusher was Kyler Fackrell. And with all due respect, Kyler Fackrell stinks. Before that, it was a first-round pick on Nick Perry. They just haven't invested in the position, and it's showing. The good news is the defensive backs should only get better. There will still be some growing pains, I'm sure, but they'll get better than they already are, which is encouraging. The pass rush, I don't know how that improves. It's not like somebody's going to trade Khalil Mack again, so they're going to have – Brian Gutekunst is going to have to get a little creative because they can't go the rest of the year with Matthews, Perry, and Reggie Gilbert because Fackrell's not even playing a ton of snaps. So that's where I'm at with those two things. Jason, do you have anything different?
My encouraging thing would be that the offense can still roll with Aaron Rodgers recovering from this injury. Because that's the one thing that we were worried about was the offense. It was going to be the defense. So my answer would have been the young defensive backs, just like yours. But I'm going to go with the offense can still roll with Aaron Rodgers. And I think over the course of these next two games, hopefully the Packers can kind of get their feet under them a little bit, work on some of their offense. I mean, I'm being disrespectful in talking about Washington and Buffalo as if they're preseason games, but that's how much better the Packers are than both. So they should win them both, regardless of whether or not Adrian Peterson, who is Washington's running back, plays or not. He's not a factor anymore, and he can talk about the old days and the days when Packers fans were terrified when he touched the ball. Those days are gone, about what he has to offer. I'm probably more worried about Alex Smith running wild than Adrian Peterson at this point, but who knows? So that's my upside. And then as far as my concern, pass rush all day. It's not there. There's no pressure on the quarterback. They're only getting it when they do tricky things. The sack that they got that Well, Kenny Clark had a sack, which was very impressive because he bull rushed his own guy back one-on-one and took Cousins down. And it's great to see the defensive line getting sacks and getting pressured instead of just clogging the middle. Clark almost had an interception that would have been actually possibly a difference in this game. It was late. He knocked the ball down. He had a great game. Kenny Clark is doing everything we said he was going to in the preseason and in our offseason shows. He's fantastic. But the only other sack was when Jaire Alexander and I think Reggie Gilbert converged on Cousins and took him down. And you've got to get more pressure than that. You got to do better than that. And Clay Matthews gets there a hair too late and, you know, gets flagged for what he got flagged for. But had that not been flagged, I think Matthews' presence and what he did on that play caused the throw to be bad, or he at least made Kirk Cousins panic and launch a ball to outer space. And fortunately, Jaire Alexander is young enough that his eyesight's still really good, and he saw the ball come down from outer space, re-enter the atmosphere, and fall gently into his hands before being nullified by a terrible penalty. So the defense has to learn how to close it out. They've got to get to the passer. We waited so long for Dom Capers to move on. We've waited so long for a defensive coordinator who can draw up pressure at the end of a game and get a game-sealing sack instead of having to see a cornerback dive in front of a ball or hope a receiver drops it or have the defensive back make the play. How about getting the quarterback down before he even throws the ball? So that's my biggest concern. My other concern is that they're going to look okay over these next 2 weeks. If they do, let's knock on wood and hope that everything goes the way it's supposed to and that this team is 3-0-1 going into week five. But are they going to get this inflated sense of accomplishment and that they're in good shape because they've played opponents who aren't equipped to handle anybody in the league? That's my other concern. Those are my two areas of focus there. I think the offense will continue to churn, and I think the defense will get better, but you only have who you have rushing the quarterback, and right now it's not looking great in that department as far as the who's who in that area there.
There you have it on that. Jason, we're going to switch gears a little bit. One thing I wanted to discuss, because it kind of became news last night, I was watching Ohio State and TCU, and it flashed across the bottom of my screen that the Browns were going to release Josh Gordon. And immediately, my response to that was, hell no. Like, and I have my reasons for that. And it turned into a Twitter war because I said hell no to Josh Gordon. I got people telling me he's more talented than DeAndre Hopkins. And just, it was a ridiculous conversation that I had. The reason I don't want Josh Gordon is the Browns have given him every opportunity possible, and he still screwed him up. I mean, I know that the reasons he had before, he's had some issues with alcoholism and drugs, and I get it. Like, that's a disease, and that's very important, and he's taking time and all that stuff. And that's not the reason he got released, but, like, then the Browns, he got hurt doing a promotional video of himself, and that ultimately made John Dorsey basically say, forget it, and they're going to release him on Monday. There's some teams that might trade for him, allegedly. I don't know who's involved with those things, but I have no desire to see Josh Gordon on the Packers. I don't even care. You could tell me it was going to cost him a seventh-round pick, and he was going to play for the minimum. I just, the investment that comes with him, the time and stuff you're going to have to put in, and ultimately you're hoping for somebody to emerge that we have not seen since 2013. That was 5 years ago. That is the last time Josh Gordon was a productive receiver. Not all of that because he hasn't been productive on the field. Some of it because he hasn't even been on the field. He's been suspended, all that other stuff. No, thank you. Josh Gordon's last season was a long time ago. I want no part of that. Jason, to you.
I've been thinking about this all day long, and I guess I'm just going to resolve myself to the fact that whenever a player is available, now that the whole off season went the way that it went and the Khalil Mack situation went down the way that it did and Brian Gutekunst getting after Kyle Fuller and doing some of those things we never saw before. I think we're just going to have to resign ourselves to the fact that there's going to be a discussion about every single big-name player who hits the market. I mean, Le'Veon Bell gets chided by his teammates earlier last week, and Packers fans are like, get in there, trade for him, give up your two firsts for a running back, a very expensive running back. I mean, that's just kind of the way it goes. And these aren't just necessarily Packers fans. These are media who like to stir the pot. And with the advent of social media and digital media, everybody is fighting for clicks. So I'm just going to say that. That's basically what I think of that. I don't know. Josh Gordon is a supreme talent when he's on and he is effective. I don't know if he's done anything that he's done and accomplished anything that he's accomplished in his entire career while he's been sober. I have no idea. So that's the tough part for me, is how much risk are you taking on? It comes down to how much risk you're assuming. If he comes in, and I'm assuming that because you've got a pretty stacked wide receiver position and you had two wide receivers inactive today, both of whom are healthy, that one of those two is going to the practice squad, and you're going to let your bottom practice squad run guy go, which would be either Jamon Moore or Equanimeous St. Brown. And, okay, I mean, I would take Josh Gordon at his best over either of those two right now. So in that case, that's a great swap. And at this point, I don't think the amount of interest in either Moore or St. Brown is going to be what it might have been on the last day of training camp when final cutdowns were made and teams might have been willing to add him to their roster. Now they're 2 weeks into the season, and it would be a big decision to disrupt their entire building of that roster. So Josh Gordon and Aaron Rodgers together, sure, it's a great combination. He can do some great things. It's a risky thing, and they're not the same situation. But for those of you who are free agent names, free agents, just think back to last year and what happened with the tight end, the dirtball tight end. You know, things went south for a different reason, but that's some of the risks that you take on when you get some of these players who come in there that have had an interesting past. They're hot-headed. They've had substance issues. They've been suspended. Whatever the issues be, you've got to take the whole picture into account and ask yourself, what's it going to do to the locker room? What's it going to do to the offense on the field? You know, is it going to be disruptive? How do the players feel about it? Do the players want this type of a play? I would imagine that, you know, I could be wrong. I don't think Brian Gutekunst is very closed-minded individual. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he was thinking about doing it, if he didn't call Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams and Jimmy Graham and some of their veterans into the room and say, thinking about this, how do you feel about it? That's really what it's going to come down to. So I'll trust in whatever the team does. I think it's very unlikely that he ends up in Green Bay. Just doesn't seem like a very Packers-esque move, and receiver is not the position that has the gaping hole. If Josh Gordon was a superstar pass rusher and they only needed him to play 15 to 20 snaps a game, then we're having a different discussion, but I'll leave it up to the team to decide.
And I'll leave it up to me. My answer remains no. As in the words of the great Bill Belichick, we are on to Washington. Packers will play in D.C. next week, the nation's capital. Take on Alex Smith and the revamped Washington Redskins. They are 1-1. They won on opening day against the Arizona Cardinals, which, Jason, much to your joy, they look to be in a running with the Buffalo Bills as the worst team in football. And they lost today, as I mentioned. They laid an egg against the Indianapolis Colts. They are 1-1 going into a game against Green Bay. Jason, if I have a concern, I did mention that they have two winnable games. If I do have a concern about this matchup, it is that the Packers just played a game in essence, they just played five quarters. They're 5 minutes short of playing five full quarters. I don't know what kind of effect that's going to have. Mike McCarthy is very good at getting his teams to respond to adverse situations. That's kind of his MO since he's been the coach in Green Bay. So that part is encouraging. It's just a concern because that is a physical toll that is taken on a body, and the Packers may not bounce back. I think it's very possible. It's a scenario that I've played out in my head. It's possible for them to sleepwalk through the first half and eventually grind out an ugly win or have a bad loss. I mean, that's possible as well. Ultimately, when it comes to Washington specifically, though, Alex Smith is their quarterback. I've never thought particularly highly of him. Their weapon, I mean, Adrian Peterson is their starting running back. He's 837 years old. And the last I looked, while there are some really young players on the Packers defense, there aren't any actual children. So I don't know. I don't think he's going to be able to beat any of them one-on-one. So that's good news. And I think the Packers have a chance to make some plays against their defense. I don't think Washington's defense is going to be very good. And that gives the Packers a chance. And hopefully, the big thing I'm going to be paying attention to is how they handle things in the backfield, because Aaron Jones is back. He will return from his suspension on probably Monday or Tuesday. So you'll probably see a roster move either tomorrow or Tuesday night. And I want to see Aaron Jones getting the majority. I mean, Jamal Williams does some good things. I've said this enough to probably make you guys puke. Jamal Williams has a role. Ty Montgomery has a role. Aaron Jones with the ball in his hands is special. That's just the reality of the situation. He is their best running back. He needs to be the one getting the majority of the carries, assuming he's healthy, which I have reason to believe that he is. He played in the final preseason game, and he's been missing for the last 2 weeks. So probably didn't get hurt outside of there. Jones needs to be the running back when he's healthy and available. I will be paying attention to that. Defensively, there isn't a guy on that Washington offense that scares me as far as their receivers go. Jordan Reed is a very good tight end. That is something the Packers will probably base their game plan around. Ultimately, I think this game is going to be a little sloppy, a little ugly. I like Green Bay to win like 23-17. And it may not end up that close, but because of today's game going into overtime and playing the full overtime period, I just think the Packers are going to have a somewhat difficult time adjusting to that. So I like Green Bay to win, but I don't think it's going to be the slam dunk everyone's hoping for. Jason, how do you feel?
I feel pretty good about Washington and going on the road, taking on this team. It's a road game. Crazy things happen. Weird things happen. I know the Packers are going to be involved in a couple of weird games where a seemingly predictable result won't be what we thought it was going to be. Hopefully, maybe today made up for a couple of other games that we really don't want to see flip upside down or go sideways, that being either of the next two games. I don't see any way where the fourth game goes sideways, but this one's a road game, and Alex Smith has been around, and he threw it over 40 times in this week's game, which clearly was not the right recipe for success against whoever they lost to. I'm completely lost here. I completely blanked. But I will say that if the Packers want to recreate that problem, they have to get up early and they have to start fast. Now, they did that in this game today against the Vikings and saw that clearly you got to get up faster and get up more against a good team like Minnesota. Washington isn't that. So I think they finally have the horses to contend with the Jordan Reeds and the tight end situation that has given them problems in this matchup in the past. So I think they'll be fine in that regard. And I'm looking for one of these young corners to get their first interception. You know, Jaire Alexander was robbed today of his, and I'm really looking forward to these guys getting more involved. I hope that Kevin King is not hurt too badly. He's starting to enter that territory where he's out more than he's in. So what do we have here? You know, what do we have here with Kevin King? Is he going to be available? Is he not going to be available? Because if not, then let's get Josh Jackson ready to play. Let's stick him on the outside, and let's just call it what it is and try and figure this thing out, because I know that they like King and they want him to do well, but I've not seen him make too many great plays. He hasn't been in very much. That's the biggest issue. He hasn't had the opportunity because he hasn't played much. He gave up the touchdown today. Now, I'd have to watch that one over again to see if I think King gave that up. He gave up the inside to Laquon Treadwell. That was Treadwell's first NFL touchdown. Of course, it comes against the Packers. The guy can't find the end zone to save his life. He dropped a couple balls. He tips the interception that HaHa Clinton Dix gets that we thought was going to steal the game. I mean, everything the guy does is just the bane of the Vikings fans' existence, and he finds the end zone against Kevin King. So I don't know if that was just a great route or if that was an issue by King there, but I think the Packers will be fine here, and I think they'll win by at least two possessions. I don't know that it'll be 14 points. I think a 10-point differential is about how I see this whole thing playing out, and I don't think that this game is ever really going to be in doubt, which is nice, because I got to be really honest with you. I think there's a lot of Packers fans who have made a lot of phone calls to Walgreens to refill their blood pressure medication and their heart medication over the last 2 weeks, and we need a break. So God gave us the Redskins, the Washington Redskins, and the Buffalo Bills, and that's all that I have to say about that.
Quality Forrest Gump reference. I think every one of your thoughts has ended with something of that sort. So I don't know if you were doing a bit, but that's funny. And I got to tell you, Jason, okay, that's wonderful. As soon as Treadwell was standing in the end zone, I heard your voice in the back of my head. Like, it's always the Packers that break these streaks, and it's just ridiculous. Because at first I'm like,
yep,
he's just being ridiculous. And, like, you're not, because it's true. Like, somebody, who was it? The Chiefs don't have a touchdown from a wide receiver in God knows how long. Sure enough, that night, Jeremy Maclin's got a touchdown. I mean, it's a weird thing. I don't even know what else to call it. It's just a weird thing. But, okay, so we both like Green Bay to win against Washington. And then, yeah, like you mentioned, there seems to be a game, even when the Packers are really good, there's a game every year that goes sideways. They lose against a team that they should beat relatively handily. And the example that I always use of, like, the best example of that game is 2014 when they went to Buffalo and got beat there. That never should have happened. But it did. And ultimately, it could have cost the Packers' trip to the Super Bowl. They would have had home field advantage throughout the playoffs had they won that game that year. But they didn't, and we all know what happened after that. So it's unfortunate. Hopefully, I can't picture them losing to Buffalo, but that's looking really far ahead. Ultimately, Green Bay needs to get back off the mat here, so to speak. Nobody feels real good about anything today. The Packers are looking at the game. I mean, the demeanor from interviews in the locker room and stuff like that that I was listening to on the radio here, nobody sounds like they're happy in Green Bay, which, I mean, they tied, and they tied in a game that they felt like they should have won. So I understand that. But the Vikings don't feel particularly good about it either, because they had two chances to kick field goals in overtime to win the game, and their kicker missed both, and he missed the last one, like, bad. It wasn't like Blair Walsh bad, but it wasn't even close. Which is, I mean, again, it's kind of funny because the game never should have gotten to that point anyways, but I digress. So that's the way that the Packers season has gone to a start. They're 1-0-1, and ultimately, if you'd have told me that at halftime of the Bears game they were going to essentially be down 20-0 at one point, I guess I would have taken that. Ultimately, a tie, it sucks. I don't think the National Football League should allow ties. I think it's ridiculous that they do. But it's better than a loss. Ultimately, you feel better at 1-0-1 than you do at 1-1. Jason, you have the final thought this week, so it is all yours.
Thank you. Before we go, I just want to mention, and before we, I shouldn't say forget, we wouldn't forget. And hopefully, Jacob, you got a chance to watch some of this happen live. Today was a special day for the Green Bay Packers. We were able to add our beloved Jerry Kramer to the Lambeau Ring of Honor at halftime, and his name now sits in the bowl at Lambeau Field, and I cannot wait to see it when I'm there a couple weeks from now with you in the house as well to watch the Packers take on the to watch the Packers beat the San Francisco 49ers, who looked really not great today. Again, Jerry Kramer, Hall of Famer, feels so good to say that. It's an honor and finally a pleasure to be able to add him to all of the famous names from not just the Lombardi era, but throughout the Packers history as the greats. And I think it's very, very deserving. So cheers to Jerry Kramer, who had a Hall of Fame NFL career and today only solidified what we already know. He is a legend in Green Bay. I could not be happier for Jerry Kramer and his family. Go Pack, go.
Yeah, I'm a little bummed that I didn't get that in earlier. I didn't even think about it. But yeah, I did get to see that. It was awesome. It's great that Jerry Kramer, you can tell, I mean, usually my opinion on this stuff is I don't really care about who gets into the Hall of Fame. I'm not going to, like, act like it's this huge injustice. Like, I got a friend of mine who's a huge Terrell Owens fan, and, like, you would have thought he shot his puppy. Somebody shot his puppy when they found out Owens didn't get into the Hall of Fame, like, the first ballot, which, okay, whatever. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. I don't think it's that big of a deal. But Jerry Kramer is a little different because I've physically spoken to him about that, and you can see the look of what that honor meant to him. And you saw it today. I don't know if they showed it on the broadcast or not, but I know that you could tell what it meant to him. He's more than thrilled to be in the Hall of Fame. He's a great speaker. I always tell people he's like the stereotypical grandpa you sit around the fireplace, and he's the guy you sit there and listen to his old war stories from, and I could listen to Jerry Kramer talk all day long. So, yes, congratulations, 64. It's great to have you in the Ring of Honor. It's great to have you in the Hall of Fame. We know you should have been in the Hall of Fame 50 years ago, but, hey, good things come to those who wait, I guess. Big day for the Packers in regard then. And that's going to do it, actually. That's going to be our final thought for today's show. Check out PackersTalk.com for your latest Packers news and podcasts. TicketKing.com, want to thank our sponsor. You heard the intro. It kind of got spliced in at the beginning there. Again, we apologize, but with the way today went, it's almost fitting that the beginning was a little goofy, just like the end was at Lambeau Field today. They are a sponsor. Them for this. It's right down the street from Lambeau. Like I mentioned, I pass it every week that I'm up there. Grab your tickets. They have tickets available day of game. So if you don't even decide until Sunday morning that you want to go to the game, grab your tickets for the Buffalo game and let's watch it happen that day right there at Lambeau Field against the Buffalo Bills. Packers 29, Vikings 29, the second tie the Packers have had in the last 5 years, both of which, oddly enough, have come against the Minnesota Vikings, also at Lambeau Field. Goofy game, not the result anybody wanted. Obviously, you want the win, but the Packers have to like at least sort of where they're at this point. It's a loaded NFC conference. Every loss is going to matter a little bit. They have Washington next week, Sunday at noon. Alex Smith against Aaron Rodgers in the matchup of that draft. It's going to be a fun time. Hopefully a big Packers win, but we'll talk more about that next week. Thank you guys for listening into Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.